Education Subcommittee of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. This is Tuesday, April 15th. And today we are going to do a public hearing on House Bill 5009, which is the budget bill for the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. Open public hearing on House Bill 5009. And Mr. Bender, could you give us legislative fiscal's view of the world here?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Today is the first day of five scheduled meeting days on this budget, 4 days of presentation, and then one to be followed by 1 day for public testimony. The Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development is the department through which you provide funding to the state's 17 community colleges, and also through which you provide funding for a number of other programs and the administration of federal programs for workforce development, hence the name of the department to capture those various activities that it engages in. I provided a few pages just of some very high-level information, not much detail here, but just to sort of set the grounding for your analysis of this budget to keep things in context as you hear this considerable presentation over the next few days as to the financial situations facing the various programs that the department administers, as well as what it is indeed that those programs are doing and accomplishing. But I've distributed a packet of materials that's all stapled together. For those of you in the audience, these sheets were not stapled together, but I'll just be going through some of the items here very briefly to lay the groundwork for this agency budget. At the top of this, the first page of this little packet of information includes or is a copy of the agency's priority list that lists all of its services. The agencies were asked to prioritize the funding in its budget from the highest level to the lowest of priorities of the programs that they administer. And I just wanted to use this program not to talk about the order of prioritization, but to use it as a way of just showing you the various things that this department budget is financing. The main thing that this department budget is financing is distribution of state support, which is in the form of general fund dollars, to community colleges. And you can see the largest item there is the Community College Support Fund itself. This is a distribution to community colleges that is based almost exclusively on their enrollment levels. So the funding is provided on a full-time equivalent basis with some modifications. And this session you've probably been hearing about bills that are out there that you're not looking at today that would affect the distribution of funds among the community colleges. I just wanted to point out at this point that the distribution formula of state funds for community colleges is not in statute. It's similar to the way higher ed works, where the distribution is determined by the State Board of Higher Education formally determines how you distribute your state funds to the institutions of higher ed. They use a RAM model to do that, and the State Board of Education determines how the funds are distributed to community colleges. So some of that discussion will come up in more detail when we get to the Community College Support Fund. But the vast majority of funds, of general fund that you provide to this agency, is then distributed out to the state's 17 community colleges to assist in their operations. And those funds are currently forming approximately 45% or so of the general operating funds for the community colleges. So it's slightly less than half of their funds are coming from the state at this point, or would be proposed at this point under the governor's balanced budget. There are a number of other items under community colleges. Those next several ones up to the line that says CCWD administration. So those five items are all, again, being transferred to community colleges, but going through various, not going directly through the funding formula, but through various other distributions. There is general fund for administration of the agency. some of the agency's administrative functions are to provide guidance and services to community colleges, and also to collect and information on community college operations. So there is some state general fund to support those functions as well. The Perkins funds that you see there is a federal program to support professional and technical education, and the, those funds accrue to both K-12 schools and to community colleges, and this department receives the funds and distributes and administers the program as it relates to community colleges. There is debt service in this budget. The debt service is actually for bonds that the state issued to help construct community college facilities back in the 60s and 70s. There's been no state bonds for community college construction since then, but the debts are, you know, these bonds have very long term, and they're pretty much close to expiring at this point, but there is still debt service being paid today for those bonds that were issued during that time period.
Mr. Bender, when is the debt scheduled to be paid off?
I'm not sure if next biennium will be the last biennium or if there's one biennium after that, but it is getting close to the end.
Mr. McGee, do you have any insight on that?
Madam Chair, Bill McGee from DAS. I think it's probably one biennium beyond that, but we're about two bienniums away from the total, so it's virtually done.
The next item that this agency administers is the GED program to provide an alternate credential for students who have not received a high school diploma. And this is an entirely fee-supported program, and the state administers this program. They don't provide the services at the local sites, but they provide administration of the program. They test, they provide scoring of the exams. This program involves taking an exam in order to receive the credential, and they are involved in that activity. The next items you see there under four are a series of federally funded programs designed to assist the workforce and dislocated workers and other services. There are basically most of the funds that the agency receives are through the Federal Workforce Investment Act. And you will hear more about these programs and what they actually mean and what they are doing later, mainly tomorrow. Another general fund supported program within this budget is support of the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps. That program receives some general fund, though it's primarily other funds supported at this point, and there will be a discussion of that as well. These are the basic programs of the department that you'll be looking at over the next few days.
Representative Bates has a question.
Steve, is on the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps, the other funds, is that a matching fund from state funds, or is that just other funds straight?
There are a number of sources of other funds in that budget. One of those funds are... So one source of those funds are receipts from the amusement device tax, but they also receive funds from other state agencies that utilize the services of the Youth Conservation Corps, which I know that Parks pays for Youth Conservation Corps crews to work on their programs, and a number of various sources of other funds to help support this program.
Isn't necessarily match funds then?
No, I don't believe it would be considered a match.
Thank you.
The next page, which is the color chart, for those of you, it would be black and white. We weren't able to make color copies for everyone, but it shows, this is just to show some context of this budget that you're receiving from the governor for the community college and workforce development. That's the third set, the third agency from the left, CCWD. You can see that during the five special sessions, there was a 7.8% reduction in funding from the level that had been approved during the last session. And this was pretty much in line with some of the other education agencies that you see here. In the governor's recommended budget, there's a considerable larger decrease or decline of 13.2% in funding from the level of 2001. These numbers are a little tricky. If you looked directly at the numbers that you would see from the by adding up the numbers in the appropriations bills and the special session adjustments, they wouldn't exactly look like this. But part of the reason is there were adjustments that were made in terms of changing the timing of the Community College Support Fund payment, which looked like it was a reduction of $56 million, but it's not a reduction in the sense of that colleges can't spend that money. So these are figures just for that, and try to look at the actual funds of state monies that are available to colleges and to the rest of the department for expenditures. So this is a very tight budget that is coming to you with a 13.2% decline from what was approved in 2001 and a 5.4% decline from what was approved in 1999-01. So it's even less funding than there was two sessions ago. The next chart is designed to look not at the department's funding, but to look more at the 17 community colleges funds and the funds that are available to them to support their educational programs. There are other sources of money to community colleges besides the state support. And the other two big sources of funds for community colleges are their tuition payments and their property taxes that they receive. This shows a trend here of what's been happening really since Measure 5 was passed in 1990 to those three revenue sources. And then the top line shows the total of all revenues that are available to community colleges. So what you can see here is that community college total resources, their situation is better than it is when you look just at the state support, because their property tax collections are growing and their tuition revenues are projected to increase as well. I need to caution you about the tuition numbers. The tuition numbers are just projections, and they are very difficult to project in the community college system, even more difficult than they are to project in the Oregon University system, because you do have 17 independent boards, and there is not a central board that is setting tuition policy. So we don't know what the enrollments will be in the future, and we don't know exactly what the tuition rates will be that the colleges will set, but this is the estimate that the department is using, and it does show that there's some increase that the colleges will have in their funding in the next 2 years. It's only, though, if you compare the total funding at the top there for 03-05 compared to 01-03, it's about a 2.7% increase in the total funds available. And finally, I don't want to take up too much more time of the department's presentation, but just to show some of the things that have been happening in community colleges. And the top chart there on the last page looks at average annualized community college tuition. And you can see the tuition rates here, which are slightly more at this point than half of what you would see at OUS. They have also been, there have been considerable tuition rate increases in the community college system as there have been in higher ed. So this has been going on in both situations. In fact, this year, which would be the 2002-03 academic year, they're showing an average increase. This would be the number where you see it's 2143 on this chart. The increase from the prior average of $1,814 is an 18.2% increase. So that's an 18% increase in 1 year. And then the projection at this point for the next year which hasn't started yet, but for the next year, which will be starting in the fall, is for a further 11.6% increase. So there's a very steep increase in community college tuition rates that has been occurring over the past few years and is projected to continue. Finally, that last diagram, which is quite complicated, and just what it's just designed to show is it's designed to show the total enrollment in community college programs on a full-time equivalent basis. And you can see that the enrollments peaked in 2001-03 and are projected to be down somewhat in the current year, which is the 2002-03 year. After that, the projections, these are agency projections, they're projecting an additional decline in enrollment, but the extent of the decline is based upon the amount of the budget, the amount of support that is available. So the top line there of the decline represents their projections for enrollment under the governor's balanced budget proposal, and then the impacts of various reductions in funding below that. Again, I do wish to stress that these are all projections. These are the agency's method of projecting enrollment. And these are not LFO projections.
Questions or comments for Mr. Bender? Representative Bates.
Mr. Bender, just to review, in my mind, what has been the increase at OUS for the last couple of years for on a percentage basis for tuition? I don't remember what that figure is offhand. Do you?
It's a little less, I believe. Certainly this past year, it was about 14.5% as opposed to the 18.2% increase for community colleges. The year before, I think it would have been a little higher. In the prior year here, the increase from the 1750 to 1814 is only a 3.6% increase. And I forget what it was for higher ed that year, but it was closer to 4 or 5.
Steve, you're adding fees in that as well when you talk.
For the higher ed, that doesn't
include
the
fees. Your answer included fees.
Yes, and for these numbers here, I believe they do include some of the fees in those figures.
Steve? I'm sorry.
No, I'll finish
that. Representative Steve, on the declining enrollment from 2001-02 to 2002-03, which you show here, is that because of a lack of applicants, or is it because they had the applicants but there was not capacity, or they had the applicants and the applicants said, no, I can't afford the tuition? Do you have any idea of why that actually went down?
It's not because of lack of applicants, per se. It would be due to some combination of the other two, in the sense that as community colleges have faced tight budgets, they have had to reduce, in some cases, the number of course sections that they're offering, which provides less, they have less capacity to serve students. And also, as these tuition rates are increasing, clearly some students would be deciding that they would not be able to attend. But we can't break that. I don't have figures to break that down.
Madam Chair, will we have an opportunity to look at that more closely as we go through the presentation?
I would anticipate that that would be a great question to ask the presenters.
Thank you.
Further questions or comments from Mr. Bender?
Yeah, I do. On the front,
Smith.
On the front page, when we list their priorities, they have debt service as number two. Shouldn't that be number one? I mean, you have to pay your debt.
We don't.
They do. I mean, I just think that's kind of a funny little deal there. You know, what if we ever got up to the 4.5, 5.4.3.2 level? I mean, in reality, in real life, that would become number one.
Well, you are right. We do have to pay the debt.
Well, I thought that was kind of funny. Just thought I'd make a little comment.
Geek. Point well made, Representative Smith. Further questions or comments for Mr. Bender? We will then have Ms. Cruz-Braley come forward and begin the presentation on the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development budget. Committee members, I would urge you to ask questions as we go through this and gather the information that you need. Mr. McGee will be using about the last 15 minutes of the session today to present BAM's view of the world to us. So, Cam, please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, Camp Royce Brawley, I'm the Commissioner for Community Colleges and Workforce Development. It's an auspicious day to start a budget hearing, being that it is April 15th. Our opportunity, I think, is to show you how your tax dollars, be they general and Oregon state funds or federal tax dollars, how well they're working for you. We do want to do an overview today. I am the lone talking head. Hopefully you won't get too tired of me today. We're trying to be cognizant of the time available to us and to you, so what we have hope to do over the next 4 days is bring you a very small sampling of the delivery of these programs at the local level. We will also continue to bring the poster board that has actual stories from around the state. Because of travel restrictions, a lot of people are not able to come and share their story either with you personally or here at the dais. So we are going to try to bring you each day different stories of how the impact of these dollars and our efforts improve the lives of Oregonians. So with that, I'll begin. You do have a set of handouts. You also have the PowerPoint overhead, whichever is easiest for you to follow along. Of course, the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development has a mission statement, but when I think about that mission statement, I think about what comes to mind when you think about community colleges and workforce development. It's a place where young students can transfer to a university after having 2 years of success at a community college. It's a place where someone who has lost their job can find the assistance they need to find their next job. It's a place where technical training skills can be provided to an employer who needs that next bit of productivity to stay competitive. It's also an opportunity for someone to get a credential if they had failed at high school. That's the mission of the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. And we actually deliver very little of those services, but we do provide the resources and the leadership to build skills for Oregonians. The agency is under the auspices of really two overseers, probably three if I include the legislature, but directly our delegated authority comes from the State Board of Education to distribute state aid to community colleges, to approve programs that are offered at community colleges, and to adopt administrative rules for community colleges. And on behalf of the governor, the department also implements, working with other state and local partners, the implementation and oversight of the Federal Workforce Investment Act, Title I-B, which is commonly referred to as one-stop workforce career centers, as well as adult basic education. Again, on slide four are the programs that are administered, the support fund, the GED testing, the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps, and then the list of federal grants. Later in the presentation, we will talk to the committee about Even Start Family Literacy. We are proposing in our budget that program be transferred to the Department of Education, and that is primarily because federal legislation under No Child Left Behind believes it is better aligned there. So we have all of these different funding sources that come to the department, and how do we make sense of such a menagerie? What we have done on slide five is to try to communicate both with ourselves, with our partners and other stakeholders, with how our efforts to integrate might appear, or how we can take what seem to be disparate programs and funding sources and accomplish a set of strategic targets. We believe our responsibility is to take federal and state resources together to provide education and skill development for Oregonians. So the left-hand side of this particular schematic shows you our administrative functions, those statutory functions that we are required to do by virtue of the funds that we receive. And they are not particularly novel. Whenever one receives federal resources or state resources, you have a set of operational functions that are in the bottom left-hand box that you must do. The right-hand side is our distribution to the local level and some of the agency benchmarks that we are working on around adult literacy, workforce readiness, and access. But the center is where we try to be working less in the margins and more through a leadership agenda to encourage and provide strategic focus for language proficiency and literacy, to help lead the charge with others on the knowledge, the Council for Knowledge and Economic Development, about the development of a strategic plan for knowledge workers. And I'm sure you have heard already considerable focus across the state, but particularly in our department, on preparation of the healthcare workforce. So we are using these strategic targets, whether they be legislative initiatives, governor's office initiatives, or federal initiatives, to help build the skills of Oregonians. Slide 6 is our easy-to-read organizational chart. We will, as we move through the different programs, be pulling out so that you can see which of the 46.7 FTE provide service for which of the programs. The Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development historically was the Office of Community College Services until 1999. And in 1999, the federal workforce training programs were added. We have spent since 99 what seemed like a really good fit working to integrate, and the past slide is an illustration of how we have chosen strategic targets such as literacy that really do have an umbrella across all of our funding sources. And the organizational chart will become more clear as we move through. We will also spend some time tomorrow and on Thursday running through our requests for additional positions. We have taken on considerable activity under the Workforce Investment Act and would ask for your consideration in staff increases there.
I have a question.
Senator Gordley.
Thank you, Representative Smith, Chair Smith. As we look at the agency benchmarks on the previous slide, should we look at those agency benchmarks as being in alignment with the Oregon benchmarks? And where in the notebook would you draw our attention if we wanted to track that piece?
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, on page 14 we begin the actual detailing of the Oregon benchmarks and our efforts there. Yes.
Thank you.
Further question?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Just to finish on this organizational chart, I'm certain that the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development is not alone in having individuals in their organization that are funded by more than one fund source. But I recently did a count, and since I can't bring you a colored print out of all these different positions, we have 25 positions that are funded by two or more fund sources. 16 that of that 25, 16 are funded by three different fund sources. We actually have a smattering that are about a handful, half a dozen, who are paid for with four funding sources. So they we are doing our level best to leverage the resources that come to the agency.
Mm-hmm.
So what about that agency budget? On slide 7, shows you that a little over 97% of the agency budget does go for local service delivery. I have already alluded to that. The Services are delivered by 17 community colleges, 7 local workforce investment areas, that's the federal workforce providers, and numerous is really 36, one for every county Youth Conservation Corps service entities.
Question. The 36 Conservation Corps, is that a mandate?
It is state statute, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you.
We have 2.1% of the agency budget is for administration and, as already discussed, a small piece of debt service. This graph actually shows you in a more pictorial way. It shows functionally how the dollars are distributed inside the budget. The total budget is $555 million and change. That includes, as you can see, 97% special payments.
Mm-hmm.
It just gives you a little more detail about where that money goes.
Mm-hmm.
Slide 8 then further breaks it down. It shows the source of revenue so that you can see that 74% of the state of the agency's budget is state general fund. Other funds are 2.3%, and federal funds are 23%. Slide 10 just is a way for us to move from, okay, where is, how much is the money, and where are the sources that it comes from, to where does the money go? Nearly 75% of the agency resources are distributed to community colleges. Oh, sorry. We will talk in considerably greater depth and detail about community college issues in a few days, but I did want to highlight some things as you look at this slide. Community colleges are locally governed by locally elected boards. Those local boards do determine the programs and course offerings that meet the needs of that community, and the needs of Treasure Valley in Ontario are not the same as Portland Community College, nor are they the same as Southwestern Community College. The community colleges provide education, training, and community services for over 400,000 Oregonians every year. They ensure that literacy and ESL is available to those individuals who are in need of those services. And they provide a pivotal role to businesses to ensure that through customized training and other activities that they can stay competitive. Slide 11 shows you how that 75% of our budget is distributed to community colleges. I would note that between 2001 and 2003, the majority of community colleges, because the level of funding has diminished, are showing you diminished resources.
Cam, has there been any college that's been more severely impacted than any other? To me, it looks like it's pretty much even, with the exception of Klamath.
Madam Chair, I would say that they are all feeling the pain, yes.
Proceed.
The next slide moves to that 23% or 20% of our budget that is distributed to the local workforce investment areas. About $110 million a biennium in federal workforce dollars are distributed. What's important is that 85% of the resources that we receive of that 110 are mandated to go to the local level. So what you see here are the areas that currently receive those funds. And slide 13 would show you, because the funds do come in specific blocks telling us what age groups and what types of individuals should be served with those federal workforce dollars. This chart shows you the adult, youth and dislocated workers served with these resources. Adults are served through the one-stop workforce career centers, and we serve about 13,000 people a year there. The youth are both in school and out of school per federal mandate, and they range in age from 14 to 21. We serve about 5,500 youth a year. And dislocated workers, there's no age limit there. We serve about 13,500 individuals a year, and that has held pretty steady over the last 2 or 3 years because of the amount of dislocations in the state.
Question. The bottom 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, what does that mean?
Madam Chair, the key, this is the name of the local community-based organization that actually receives the funds and is responsible for administering and delivering.
Got it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Madam Chair, if I could follow up.
Senator Gordley.
Thank you. Can you tell us how those seven entities are performing?
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, indeed I can. We will go into considerable detail tomorrow when we talk about federal workforce programs, but you're a couple of slides ahead of me.
Okay.
On pages 19 and 20, we will cover performance for the last
All right.
2 years.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some of these, let me see here. Oregon, number six, Oregon Workforce Alliance, would that serve all community colleges or just a certain sector? Number six.
Madam Chair, if I can draw your attention back to this map, the Oregon Workforce Alliance serves that area that's pink.
I had that there.
Okay, I see where we're going. My map on that is not very good.
Yeah, I would concur neither.
You can't tell what's what on that. Yeah, okay. That's fine. Go ahead.
That's a 23-county area that has nine providers inside of it that that they contract with to deliver services all over that area.
Okay. Go ahead.
Moving on to links to Oregon's benchmarks. The department has been tracking a number of Oregon benchmarks for a number of years. This chart shows you sort of the history of our relationship with some of these, whether it's a new or modified benchmark. We have prioritized seven benchmarks as key links to the department, and they include the percentage of adults who've completed high school or an equivalent, the percentage of adults who've completed some college, adults who have post-secondary professional technical certificates or credentials, percentage of adults with intermediate literacy skills, Oregonians who can use a computer, and the percentage of the labor force who has received at least 20 hours of skill training in the past year. We have grouped those then under agency priorities, which you see in the left-hand column. Goal number one, Oregonians will have strong literacy skills. We have four benchmarks that we are tracking there, and we have the where available the 2000 value and our 2005 target. And I'd be happy to run in any deeper detail that the committee would like.
Go ahead. We'll ask questions, I think, as they come to mind, but you can proceed.
With number 23, the number of GEDs, or the benchmark is completed high school or equivalent program, we're primarily looking at GED there, and the number of students who are enrolled and successfully complete through federal workforce programs and the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps. You can see that for GED, our target is going down because we're hoping that youth get the credential that they need while they're still in high school, and there's less need for a GED.
I am concerned. I've been holding my questions on the GED. You know, you said it was earlier in your presentation, you said the GE program was fee-funded. But is that program 100% paid by fees?
Madam Chair, indeed it is.
That's amazing. What percentage of our high school students... Okay, how do I want to frame this question? To make it the most fair for you to answer. Do you know where I'm going with this? What percentage of our students get their GED from your community colleges versus high school?
Madam Chair, I don't have that at the top of my head. I'd be more than happy to bring you back that information, though.
Representative Bates.
I'm trying to think from my own experience as a school board member. I don't remember that our district dealt with GEDs. I think we did it all at the community college level, but I could easily be wrong about that. My memory is that you do 100%.
You do 100%.
Yeah, you do all the GEDs. The real question is, what percentage of kids that go through high school end up getting their GED from you and don't graduate from high school? That's the real question.
Yeah.
And I think it's around 20%.
Madam Chair, Representative Bates,
I may be wrong about that.
That is how I was interpreting Representative Smith's question. Not
that's what I was asking.
Yes, what the percentage is, and I really don't have that.
And don't quote me. That I could be completely wrong.
Okay.
But that's my memory.
Go ahead. Okay.
Continuing with goal number one on page 14. We're looking at benchmark number 27, the number of students completing a basic literacy level. We are expecting that to increase. Number 28, the number of students who successfully complete community college courses in word processing, spreadsheet, and other software, also expecting that to increase. As the increased demand for knowledge workers, we think it's prudent to plan and set that goal higher. Moving to slide number 15, continuing on links to benchmark, the goal number two, Oregon's workforce is well-trained and has access to a wide variety of training programs. In this particular segment, we have included Small Business Development Center and the clients that they serve. This is a new benchmark. We've been working for some time with the Oregon Progress Board to clearly articulate this as an outcome measure. We have previously used number of hours counseled. That's a process measure rather than an outcome measure, so we are continuing to work on this one and look for an increase of 15% by 2005. Benchmark number 29, the percentage of participants who have received some training while working. We would anticipate that federally workforce-funded current workforce, those individuals that are already working who have access to training, would rank their training as good to better. We currently do have a value of 89%, and we have increased it slightly. Again, the percentage of companies ranking training they received through the Community College Business and Industry Training System, fondly known as BITS, as good or better, is also at 93% at last measure, and we intend to hold on to that positive rating.
Why aren't you increasing it? If you're already at your target level.
Madam Chair, I think that what you see are conservative targets given the funding situation of community colleges.
Go ahead.
Number 25, the percentage of community college students passing national licensure and certification tests.
Could we go back?
Yes, Senator Gordley.
I'd just like to unpack that response a bit. The measure speaks to how companies would rank the training as opposed to the financial status of our mm-hmm. community college system, we would all agree it's in dire straits. So I'm not quite understanding your response to Representative Smith's question about why you're keeping the percentage at the same level.
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, I appreciate the follow-up, and I was not being flippant, I assure you.
I understand.
The business and industry training system does a lot of outreach. The 17 community colleges use the individuals that are part of this network to reach out to business and to provide the training that they need. They were, in the past, able to absorb more of the development costs than they are now able to. So the conversation is that the portion that the company has to pay is getting higher, and perhaps it's at 100%, and the expertise of the college is the packaging of the curriculum and the delivery of that service. And from feedback I have gotten from individuals who are part of this network, it is harder and harder to assure that the employer will feel really good about the increase portion that they are paying and that they're getting exactly what they wanted.
Do you have a follow-up,
I
Senator?
Do, Madam Chair. The other question goes to, we're now in 2003 and we're looking at 2000 values contrasted to what we expect to achieve in 2005. Do we not have information for 2003 to look at in all of these categories?
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, to my knowledge, those values are not yet available. The 2002 values, is that correct?
2003 to 2002.
Okay.
So then, as we're looking at the most recent Oregon Progress Board report, which came out in March 2003, mm-hmm. I'm just trying to figure out how to align your presentation with the information in this report.
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, we were attempting to use the values where we had the most information, and for that we used the year 2000.
Okay.
I would be more than happy to redo these two charts and add the latest information and bring them back.
Madam Chair, I would be most interested in the latest information, and that would be very helpful, I think, to all of the committee members. Thank you.
Be happy to do that. I believe I was on percentage of community college students passing national licensure and certification tests. The value is 94%. Our target remains at 94%. Our actual rating there does move from 99% for some licensure to, I think, a low of 92%. So Oregon community colleges do an extremely good job at this particular benchmark. And the last one in the category for skills training is the number of professional technical degrees and certificates awarded. That is a fairly new benchmark. Again, we've been working with the Progress Board to appropriately define this one, and we have increased the target from 3,700 to 41. The last goal for the department is goal number three: all Oregonians have access to excellent, affordable community college services. We have three benchmarks that align there. The first one is the rank of community college tuition and fees among all Western states. We had been third highest in our region out of 14. We are currently we would like to lower that to eighth. We would like to be more in the middle of the pack instead of closer to the front of the pack. The next one is the number of high school students enrolled in community college credit programs. We would like to see that increase. We think it is a critical role that community colleges provide, and that's to help students who are ready and interested in proceeding on to gain community college credit, that's open to them. So that target is also increased.
But again, Madam Chair, these are 2,000 figures, right, that we're looking at?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, go ahead. Yes.
I got the answer.
Okay. Pardon me. Go ahead.
And the last benchmark and key performance measure is that community colleges will continue to serve racial and ethnic minorities at the state's average or exceed that. And we are currently exceeding it, and we continue we intend to continue that in our targets. Moving on then to a more or perhaps a less formal set of performance indicators. I'll direct your attention to the Community College Pledge to Oregon, that's slide 16. And in the front flyleaf of your packet, you have a front and back which has these goals as well as our 2005 and 6 targets and how we have progressed since 98-99, which was the last years that this information was presented to the legislature. These goals and performance indicators that you have before you were crafted by the Oregon Community Colleges themselves, and they were crafted in the year 2000 as a way of pledging to Oregonians, executive branch and legislative branch, that we will continue to be accessible, adaptable, affordable, and accountable. And these are the measures that have been developed so that you can track our performance.
Question, Representative Bates.
Cam, you can probably tell there's been discussion going on up here. And I'm extremely troubled. I'm concerned about some of the big budget pictures I'm seeing here. I'm going to get this question right out the front right the first day and then give you an opportunity over the next couple of days to reply to us. I think that community colleges are a real backbone to our education system after K-12, especially for low-income and middle-income kids and for vocational training. OUS doesn't offer much of that. And for many, many, many kids in our state, they can't afford to go to the OUS system the first couple of years. And in the communities I serve, I have a mixture of very high-end kids financially and very low-end kids financially. And rural community college and other colleges of that nature are the only access they have the first 2 years of college. They are finding it more and more difficult to access our community colleges, and it's because of cost. When I look at this overall budget and I see a lack of state support and I see a decrease in your enrollment, but I haven't heard anything about a decrease in applicants, it concerns me. I also have issues with whether we flat fund or we don't flat fund the opportunity grants. I have questions about where the money is flowing as far as which campuses get what kind of money and how much they get. I have questions about rural versus inner city community colleges. I have questions about local support for those colleges, community colleges. And I'm digging through the material up here, and I just don't find the answers I'm looking for. Looking forward to day 4, I see we're going to talk about state funding for your programs, but I have no material on that. I need some detail.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that detail is going to tell us if our policies are driving us where we want to go. Your benchmarks speak to open enrollment. It speaks to keeping costs down so students can come to your university or to your college campuses, but I don't see the background for that. When I look at the overall budget from 40,000 feet, I think, and I'm fearful, you're drifting away from that, and you're being forced to drift away because of lack of support from state government. So this is a very broad question with some very specific questions being asked inside it. And I want you to understand I'm not hammering you guys. I'm completely supportive of you. I particularly like community colleges because of the people I serve and probably because of my own background, because that was my portal of entry for higher education. I ended up being a physician. I would have never gotten there if it weren't for community colleges. I could not afford to go to a major university. Okay? So don't take this as a hammer. We want that information so we can help you. And I just don't see it here. I mean, you're going to go through a lot of information about community colleges that many of us, I think, already know and really appreciate. But what I'm looking for is the background information of what the heck is going on in those campuses, because I don't believe things are going in the right direction in your campuses, and I think, although I don't know, it's from a lack of support from state government.
Cam, were those questions clear enough, and are you going to be able to, through this presentation, bring the answers?
Madam Chair, the questions were clear enough.
Okay.
And I will bring what answers I can.
Okay. Okay. Keeping in mind, it's not necessary that you be totally politically correct. We really want to get down to the, I think, this panel especially and all the budgets, really want to get down to the nuts and bolts. You know, you're not going to have to worry about telling us something we probably don't already know. But from your point of view, we need really clear, precise answers. And don't be afraid about insulting any of us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Thank you.
Okay, you may proceed.
Thank you.
Thank you. With that context, slides 16 and 17 are in jeopardy.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you for your honesty.
You bet. Student goals are access goals. Representative Bates, you did a fine job of explaining how access is being compromised. We've discussed workforce goals. Community colleges play a vital role of linking skill training and businesses and people together. That's also under scrutiny because it's expensive.
Good for you.
On page 17, we continue with the pledge. Accountability, the very first one, is to serve a high percentage of Oregonians. We want saturation into our communities. And with rising tuition and fees and program closures and reductions, that one is considerably at risk.
The accountability?
The accountability goals, yes. And quality.
Mm-hmm.
I am very concerned about all the issues that Representative Bates, you have raised. In order to maintain a quality education and in order to ensure that students continue to have the preparation they need in order to finish and to finish and pass when it becomes necessary for certification and licensure, you have to have a level of quality of instruction. And so our interest is in ensuring all of these goals are met, particularly the quality goal. We want to make sure that Oregon Community College students, when they finish at a community college, still have access to the university system and are accepted without a lot of questions, without a lot of holes in their transcript. Now, having said that, slide 18 tells you that Oregon's community colleges are number two when the Progress Board does their which public service do you appreciate the most? In the year 2000, we were actually number one. We were at 91%. So we've slipped a little. But we find great company in that we keep trading places with parks. They were number two in 2000, and now they're number one. So I've already warned them that we're after them.
Okay. Question, Representative Bates.
Cam, that's an interesting figure. Who do they poll for that? Just the general public?
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, yes, it's part of the Oregon Progress Board when they do their population survey around the state. It's a question that they ask.
Interesting.
Madam Chair,
Senator Gordley,
do you know how the question is framed?
Do you like community colleges or root canals?
I'm asking that because I'm interested in the placement of, or it's troubling to see the placement of K-12 education in the same customer satisfaction survey. So I'm just wondering how the how the question was posed.
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, I will bring you back the actual wording of the question, but it does run along the lines of which of Oregon's public services do you value the most, provides you the most satisfaction. But I will find the exact wording for you. Bring that tomorrow.
Keynote.
Do you have a follow-up?
Not my
okay.
Keynote of my next campaign was going to be closing the parks and open spaces in Oregon. I guess I shouldn't do that.
Well, not according to this graph.
I'm going to move now to a brief overview of the performance measures around the federal funding sources that the department administers, beginning with the Workforce Investment Act, Title I-B. There are 17 performance indicators for Title I-B. That's the one stop for adults and youth and dislocated workers. They are broken into categories. You see 2 years of performance here, program year 2000 and program year 2001. 2001 ended on June 30th of 2002. These are the statewide measures. We have there both the goal and the actual. We are currently in negotiation with the Secretary of Labor for years 2003 and 2004. I want to bring your attention to our failure under adults, earnings gain. We dropped precipitously. And our conversation with the Department of Labor is that when you have a 7.9 average unemployment rate, and your jobs that paid a living wage in manufacturing and other program areas or service areas are declining, it's difficult to maintain 37.81 as your average.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gordley.
At the same time, there was a gain in the retention rate. How do you explain that?
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, retention is not necessarily with the same employer, but employed over a 12-month period. So you may cycle in and out of jobs, and the wage rate could very likely be less.
Madam Chair.
Representative Bates.
Cam, you may not say this, I'm going to say it for you. Having an earnings gain in a prolonged and very difficult recession is not a bad thing.
Right.
You may not have reached your goal, but the fact you still had a gain, I think, is significant in itself.
Thank you.
Please proceed.
You will also see on slide 19 that there are participant customer satisfaction ratings as well as employer customer satisfaction ratings. And that's done by a third party that we have a contract with, so we're pretty confident in the numbers. This slide 20 walks through, again, the final set of performance measures for the Federal Workforce Investment Act, particularly for youth. There are different sets for youth age 19 to 21 than 14 to 18. 14 to 18 concentrating on skill attainment, the older youth adding back employment as a program goal.
Madam Chair.
Representative March.
Thank you. Cam, it looks like the earnings gain for youth in 2001 was higher than the earnings gain for adults. Does that also maybe reflect a change in the adult population that is you're working with in the Workforce Investment Act? I'm thinking of there are more older workers coming back into the, like I'm thinking of women that have not been working coming into the Workforce Investment Act and kind of a mix, a change of the population as much as the earnings?
Madam Chair, Representative March, I think that that's the best way I could describe it, is that the populations are significantly different and their starting point is also significantly different for wages. Slide 21 is the performance measure that are required for the adult education.
Representative Bates has a question.
Sorry, Madam Chair. Cam, you cannot, you're moving pretty quick here for me a second. Back on page 20, youth age 14 through 18, attainment of secondary school diplomas or equivalents.
Yes.
Do you have any idea or can you get information for us? I'd like to know what percentage of kids up to age 19 who had not gotten their high school diploma, who essentially dropped out of high school, then turned to the community colleges and got a high school equivalency or a GED. I see you're doing more and more that way.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to get an idea of that group of kids. You know, how many dropped out of high school, went over, and then got it from you, or just dropped out and disappeared would be the difference, of course. But I'd like to have some idea if you're seeing more students coming in, dropping out of high school, and going to community colleges to essentially complete their high school education, especially in that young age group, not people who, I imagine there's small numbers in their 20s and 30s who go back to the GEDs, but most of them I would think be in that age group.
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, the GED does track demographic information, so we can bring that information back for you.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And Madam Chair,
Senator Gordon,
if we could go back to page 19, the performance measures. Why would you keep the performance goal for participant and employer satisfaction low for the 2001 year after experiencing, I would call it, success? And I'm not, you know, we don't have 2002 and 2003 in front of us, but I'm just wondering why you didn't increase your expectations after experiencing success.
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, it's a very good question. The as I said when we began this portion, we actually negotiate directly with the Department of Labor on these performance goals, and we did the first 3 years, so that would be year 2000, 2001, and 2002, all at the same time. And since this was a brand new federal act, we had no real idea what our performance would be, and so we tried to not target ourselves or set the goal so high that we couldn't meet it. So what you're seeing here is a small increment of increase, given that we didn't know how our performance was going to actually present itself at the end of the year 2001. And we are currently in negotiation with the Department of Labor for years 4 and 5, which would be 2003 and 2004. And we will cover that in more detail tomorrow when we talk about the federal workforce programs.
That's helpful. Thank you.
Yeah.
Do you have a question?
No.
Please proceed.
Okay, I'm on slide 21, which is the adult education and family literacy performance. This is also part of the Workforce Investment Act. It has a different set of performance indicators. They are around increasing skills by level. So you will see that we have an average performance target that we have set, the actual performance, and then in the last right-hand column, the number of adults who have actually achieved increased their basic skill one level.
Cam, I have a question again. I think we are all somehow attracted to slide 19 and 20, but you may have covered this when I was out of the room, but I'm curious when you're going to have your 202 data or 2002 data.
I'm sorry, Representative Morgan, I didn't understand your question.
Data for 2000 and 2001, and I'm curious when your 2002 data is going to be available.
Thank you, Madam Chair. 2002, the way in which the federal program year runs is from July 1 of 2002 to June 30th of 2003.
Okay.
And we will have 2000 data available preliminarily in September, concretely in November. It takes about 5 or 6 months to make sure that we have all the program numbers available.
The discussion that we're kind of having here behind this little wall is that these are, because the community colleges are first responders in the education field, mm-hmm. that I'm real interested in seeing the next year of data, because I suspect that this is kind of a great indicator on how the economies are eroding, and that this is just charting the erosion.
Yes. Madam Chair, indeed that is true. As I indicated earlier, Senator Gordley, these particular performance measures, we were alarmed at the loss in the wage gain and the earnings replacement rate for dislocated workers, and have been in conversation to do some statistical analysis of what's happening behind these numbers and what should we be expecting. And actually have invested in what's called a regression analysis, which takes a lot of demographic and economic trend data and aligns who we would expect to serve given that demographic and economic information, and then tells us what our actual performance is likely to be. And we have, because there is considerable pressure from the Federal Department of Labor not to reduce our numbers, we have adopted this regression analysis as a way of substantiating lowering the numbers. And we believe that Oregon's economic crisis provides us at more than adequate reasoning, and would be happy to share that in more detail with you tomorrow about what all of that means and how it is just one more indicator of how difficult it is to, one, get the skills, and second, to get and keep a job.
I think that the committee would be very interested in getting that information, and I think the thrust of the discussions that we're interested in getting into is how can we gauge where the best place to go is to manage this awful situation that we've been given. And I think the regression analysis that you're doing is going to help to kind of, for the members of the committee, put some edges on the discussion that would be very valuable.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I'd be happy to do that. Bring that back.
Please proceed.
Here we are at slide 21. This is for approximately the same time frame, July of...
Okay.
One step forward.
We're just...
Oh, you were just kidding.
Oh,
okay. So sorry.
Sometimes it gets a little tense, and I feel like I've got to kind of break it up.
Oh.
Okay.
So. We're searching for humor wherever we can find it now.
Very black humor, but humor.
Slide 21 does give you the performance that was achieved by the Adult Education and Family Literacy portion of the Workforce Investment Act. This is about $9 million. It's not a lot of resource to the state. It is the 17 community colleges are the deliverer of this service. They do receive these funds. There is considerable... Although there is no match required federally, this only makes up a small portion of the adult basic ed and English as a second language services that are provided at Oregon's community colleges. And I would be happy to run through them in detail, but I think they speak for themselves. I would draw your attention to number 5, retained employment. Our performance there was actually lost ground as well. Mm-hmm. Slide 22, this is another federally funded program, the Carl Perkins Professional Technical Program. Money's come to the state
We keep going back here, and I'm sorry, but when on retained employment, on slide 20 relating to the adult education and family literacy program, is this again an issue where people just aren't staying in the jobs that you place them in? And what are the reasons, again, that the jobs go away, or what happens?
Madam Chair, the short answer is yes. We can certainly bring you back the plethora of reasons that people don't remain at a job, but certainly one of them is that the job goes away. But there are likely other factors that affect retention, including life situation, health, those kinds of things. It isn't strictly the economy, but the economy certainly plays a hand in it.
Do you have the ability to, I mean, you must have the responses categorized, and you could give us just from the highest to the lowest number of responses what the top 10 categories are?
Madam Chair, we'll bring that information back, yes.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Mezzali.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Back on slide 21, which is still there again. Help me understand what I'm looking at here, where the targets are much lower than the actual. Are the targets what are required by the federal contract? So why, you know, when I first glance at this, I'm saying the targets are too low.
Madam Chair, Senator Mezzali, this, like the previous discussion, these were negotiated with, in this case, the Secretary of Labor, Secretary of Education. And this particular program had not ever had this kind of outcome performance measure before. So in the year 2000, they actually began measuring outcomes. So the Department of Education at the federal level actually sets their performance fairly low because most states were not tracking outcomes, only process measures. Oregon, however, has been tracking outcome measures for some time, and we felt more comfortable setting our performance in some cases a little bit higher than the average performance target.
If I could follow up, Minister.
Follow up.
So I assume we're going to raise those targets in the future?
Madam Chair, Senator Mezzali, we will be conservative as we raise these targets because there are more and more individuals who want this service that we clearly don't have sufficient resources to pay for.
Thank you.
Representative Bates.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Cam, in going through these last three or four pages, which you're never going to get off, we're going to be coming back forever to, I first appreciate your honesty. You could have picked and selected and not shown us what was going on, and that's happened before this committee, so I appreciate your honesty. Secondly, on slide 21, can you describe for me what this target group really looks like? Are these people who have been out of the workforce for a long time, who have serious problems in literacy, who have difficulty getting and retaining jobs? Is this a young group, old group? You're talking about a population, but I'm having a hard time defining what adult education and family literacy is aimed at.
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, the answer to your question is yes. It is a broad range of individuals. Tomorrow, we will bring to you demographic information about their age groups and their level of literacy. But they do cover the gamut. They are young people who are proceeding perhaps in preparation for a GED. Perhaps they are people who have been in the workforce, who have lost their job, who no longer have the requisite skills to get their next job because in many cases, much of the dislocations that we have been dealing with are people who have English as a second language. And in order for them to be proficient to get the next job, they have to be able to understand and communicate in English. So it is a broad spectrum of individuals. But we will bring the specifics tomorrow.
I would take a chance on proceeding if I were you.
And I didn't think I was going to have any trouble getting the bill by 10:15. Slide 22 is another set of federal performance measures for Carl Perkins's professional technical programs. Like I was about to tell the committee that this is a program that comes to the state and is split 50% of the funds go to secondary or high schools and 50% of the funds go to community colleges for the development of professional technical programs. This resource, about approximately $10 million that comes to the state, does not buy programs. It buys curriculum development, instructional development, and those, the interaction between the business community. So what we, and then what we measure are students who are called concentrators. You'll see in 1P1, academic achievement, the rate at which postsecondary Perkins concentrators, those are students who are taking at least 6 credits of professional technical coursework. So this isn't all community college students. These are those that are in professional technical program areas.
And, Madam Chair,
Senator Gordon,
using that example, how did they arrive at 2 points as the GPA, the floor for that GPA? I'm thinking about the entrance requirements now in our Oregon University system, and those requirements have increased rather dramatically. Where's the alignment?
Madam Chair and Senator Gordley, this is not by way of excuse, it is explanation. These are federally defined, so that 2% is a federally defined benchmark. You can certainly look at our data and see if the GPA is at 2 or better. Your point is well made that a 2-point will not gain you access to a university.
Now, this would be another area, Madam Chair, where I would like to see us unpack the data to see what those GPAs look like.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm curious, too, in the retention data for Perkins programs, there appears to be a greater rate of retention in employment and in the job arena or in the education arena than there is in the other programs that we've been discussing. Is there a difference in the way that it's measured, or what? How do you account for this much higher retention rate?
Madam Chair, I'm going to begin an explanation, but would like to follow up because I think there, to use Senator Gordley's phrase, I think we need to unpack this one as well. These could be employees. We could be counting people here who are actually employed, and they aren't seeking a job, but they already have a job, and they need these this coursework or this certificate in order to keep the job and to continue on a career ladder in that job. I don't have that information in front of my brain. I would like to bring it back. But that's my assumption about the data that we are seeing here.
Okay. I think one of the things that is going to be, well, no, let's go ahead. Let's go ahead.
Any further questions about Carl Perkins?
Madam Chair.
Representative Bates.
I have lots of questions about it. We can do it some other time when we have more time. I mean, the numbers just don't make sense to me in some places, but probably because of the reasons you've already stated. What I'd like to know is how many students do you have that are in the program? Is it a large number, small number?
I'm going to move on to data systems then. The budget presentation asks for the agency to talk about the data systems that we currently have and what performance they measure. Slide 23 shows you the systems that we currently have in place, and they have very specific reasons. We have in the past had discussions about throwing over our four or five different systems and consolidating into one, we have not found that it would be financially a reasonable place to go. Part of that is evident on slide 24, which shows you the different entities that extract the data that we have or who we send our data to. You'll see that we do have the U.S. Department of Education wants information from CCWD on community colleges as well as adult basic education, but the information they want is very different. We have built for our adult basic education reporting system what's called TOPS. That tells you there how many students are served. That's tracking of programs and students. That's what TOPS stands for the adult basic education system.
So the numbers that are underneath of the names of the systems are the number of students that are in the systems? What do those numbers represent?
Madam Chair, yes. It's the number of participants.
Over what period of time?
This would be for the last biennium. Am I right, Biennium? The last year.
Oh, for the last?
Yeah, in the last year. Sure.
For the last year or the last biennium?
The last year. These are annual numbers.
02?
Yes.
So this is 0102?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Representative Bates, you're formulating some kind of query here.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. So on this, we're seeing a GED of 10,000 students.
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, yes.
That's the whole system granted 10,000 GEDs.
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, there are 10,000 test takers in GED. We have awarded, if you see in the larger 6,000. Box, 6,000 have actually been issued.
Thank you. It leads to a question in my mind, Madam Chair, if I may ask. We have a large number of students dropping out of high school for a variety of reasons, many of them social. I've often thought that those students going on directly to community colleges after the 10th grade might be of something of value to them. It's a huge controversy in this building, of course. And I've talked to my community college about this. They feel they can't take that load on without some funding following that student. Do you have any opinion on that?
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, I'd agree with your college. The last 2 years of high school are critical for students, and I think the way in which our conversation has been with the community college leadership is that we want to be able to offer community college credit to those students who are ready, but we don't want to be a dumping ground. We don't want to have students who are, for one reason or another, unable to make sufficient progress come to community colleges as just a place to escape. Currently, community colleges do review and do an assessment of every student that comes to them to ensure that where they're placed in their academic coursework is appropriate. And they would do the same for students that are without a GED. And that probably means that they would be in developmental education, depending on how they tested. So I think it's important that we keep in mind that what we want to be offering are those services that are of benefit for the student regardless of the age. But community colleges are currently not in a position to receive vast numbers of high school students.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Further questions? Senator Gordon?
Well, just picking up on the question that Representative Bates is asking, the concept that has been discussed around the building for the last couple of sessions is contained in the expanded options bill, which was reintroduced this session. And what that concept says basically is that a student who is a sophomore or above who is ready mm-hmm. to take a course or courses at a community college would have the ability to do that with the course or courses and materials and supplies being paid for by a given district. That's the concept.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about dumping students, if you will. It's recognizing that there are students who are ready to move on,
right.
and they should have the opportunity and the access point to do that. So that's the concept, I believe, that Representative Bates was alluding to.
Madam Chair.
Representative Bates.
That is partially the concept,
okay.
and I think enriching those programs through using community colleges are valuable for high-end, middle, and low-end students. The other issue I have is that I know that a small or maybe a significant percentage of high school dropouts would, I believe, be able to function inside the community college community and achieve high school equivalency or high school degree. I'm not interested in taking funds from K-12 to do that. Mm-hmm. I'm interested in offering that opportunity for those kids to go on to a community college who have clearly dropped out of the high school. There are a lot of kids that just can't function in that environment, but who I firmly believe can function in the community college environment for lots of reasons, many of them social. And I've seen those kids do that.
Mm-hmm.
The real question in my mind is how do we get funds to the community colleges so they can take that kind of a program on and not just offer a GED program, but a real enrichment program for those kids so they get the equivalent, a real equivalent of a high school degree at that young age and can move on.
Madam Chair, Representative Bates and Senator Gordley, I think you are referenced to expanded options and the concept of having community colleges and other post-secondary institutions be able to receive students who are ready is certainly a goal for all of us. The faster that students move through, those who choose to move through high school and post-secondary education, it's to all of our advantage. And community colleges have any number of operating programs currently across the state with high schools to bring those students who are ready, as well as those students who have dropped out. The bottom line question is one of access and almost first come, first serve. Because students now at the community college are not getting the classes that they want because of the reduced capacity to offer them. So it's not that there isn't an interest in making this available. It's just the availability is continuing to shrink. Any more questions about the information systems?
Just a comment. We're getting close to the time that Mr. McGee is going to be meeting mm-hmm. for his presentation, so if we could take like a four-minute bite here, and then we'll turn it over to Mr. McGee.
Indeed. Slide 25 gives you an overview of audits that have progressed at the department over the last biennium. The first bullet, last line, no findings have been identified for the agency. The agency was included in the Secretary of State's 2003 follow-up review of internal auditing. We are one of 11 agencies that does not have an internal audit position. We have a very lean administrative structure, but we are concentrating our efforts on continuing to ensure that there is sufficient separation of duties in our financial area so that even though an internal audit position would be our best hope, we don't have the funds for it, and so we will continue in this fashion. Affirmative action is slide 26.
Madam Chair.
Senator Mesley.
Sure, Madam Chair. These audits were for the community colleges as well as the workforce development, is that right?
Madam Chair, Senator Mesley, indeed, that's right.
Thank you. Was there any mention of the funding formula for community colleges in these audits and any of the background or how that's working or how that's impacting other districts? Clerk, Committee of Public Works.
Madam Chair, Senator Meserle, not to my knowledge, no. It's strictly the financial operation.
Okay. Madam Chair, I have several questions I'd like to ask about the funding formula. Would that be more appropriate at another time?
Senator Meserle, if we could take that issue up tomorrow, that would be good. Mr. McGee is scheduled to do the DAS and BAM presentation from quarter after till the end of the session.
Okay. Thank you.
And with that, it probably would be a good idea to have the affirmative action discussion tomorrow also. That is an issue that we have taken up in some detail, and I would anticipate that there are members of the committee that would appreciate an opportunity to get into more detail on the discussion.
Absolutely.
So with that, let's turn the spotlight on Mr. McGee and have him present to the members of the committee the governor's recommended budget.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Bill McGee from the Department of Administrative Services, and you have my hand out in front of you, I believe. On page 2, you've got the numbers for this agency. The governor's recommended budget has a general fund of $413.7 million. It's a 7% increase from the fifth special session, a 13% decrease from the close of session. Total funds, $555.7 million. Again, a 7.3% increase from the close of session, from the fifth special session, rather, and a 8.1% decrease from the close of session. Page 3 shows you the same breakdown on a pie chart. General fund is 75% of this agency's total budget. Federal funds, 23%. There's about a 2% other funds, and we're proposing that you establish non-limited federal funds authority of what would just round to about 0%, but I'll talk about that option in a moment. On page 4, the highlights of the governor's budget in the special sessions, the actions in the five special sessions were to reduce the community college support fund by 6%, take a 50% reduction in funding for some self-improvement courses at the community colleges, and, as you know, shift the final 2001-03 support fund payment to the 2003-05 biennium. Governor's budget rolls up the reductions that occurred in the 2001-03 special sessions. It shifts the final 2003-05 payment into 2005-07. By statute, that will continue in perpetuity. It eliminates inflation on increases for the support fund and department operations. Transfers the Even Start Literacy Program to the Department of Education and requests a shift of National Emergency Grant Funds to non-limited federal funds authority. Next page shows you first just a breakdown of the different program units in this department. I think similar to what you've seen from CAM already, the support fund is 98% of the general fund for this agency. Debt service is about 1%, office operations 1%, and the Youth Conservation Corps rounds down to 0%, very small amount there. Moving to the total funds budget now, the support fund is still 73%, so it's still the largest piece of what the agency does. Federal and other funds support for community colleges and workforce investment programs is 24%. Again, office operations, debt service, and Youth Conservation Corps are the remaining pieces of this. In terms of where the dollars are spent, not surprisingly, it's almost all special payments as the monies that transferred out to the colleges and the workforce investment areas, with a very small amount for personal service, services, supplies, and debt service. Total funds that was the general fund budget. The total fund budget, a little bit larger amount in personal services and service supplies, as the federal and other funds are picking up a larger portion of the operations. And again, special payments are still 97% of the total funds budget here. Beginning on page 9 and quickly taking you through the development of the governor's budget, we started with a $474 million general fund and $605 million total funds at the close of the 2001-03 session. No emergency board actions through April. The second special session reduced the support fund by 3%. Reduced funding for the Sabin Center programs and the new Southwestern Oregon Community College facility were reduced by 4% and took some administrative reductions as well. The base budget adjustments are pretty similar. The roll-up in 2001-03 personnel position actions and compensation changes you see for most budgets. merit increases on agency staff and a debt service adjustment, a reduction of $1 million here as the bonds are paid off over time. Essential packages, the vacancy factor, non-fixed, standard vacancy reductions. The package 20 phase and phase outs, $3.7 million reduction in general fund. This phases out funding for the Sabin Center and regional partnerships and eliminates one-time funding for a facility for Southwestern Oregon Community College. Package 30, inflation, $16.3 million general fund. That's primarily the inflation on the support fund, $21 million total funds. State government service charge is a small amount adjustment there as well. Package 50, these are fund shift package, $3.1 million general fund, about $5 million total funds. These primarily adjust the community college support fund. It backfills the timber severance tax revenues. That funding source, which did come to community colleges, has been eliminated, replaced with a different property tax structure on forest land. And so the about $1.8 million in revenues that the department had received in the prior biennium will not be received in the 03-05 biennium, so that is backfilled with the general fund. There's an adjustment for local property tax growth. The property taxes are growing faster than the state's funding, and there's about $11.6 million reduction there to accommodate the growth in local property tax. And there's a small adjustment for restoration of special session, second special session one-time fund shifts. Moving on to the policy packages, package 81, the third special session. This is just the elimination of the cost of living increase for agency staff, salary range 38 above, very small adjustment there. Package 82 is the roll-up of the fifth special session, House Bill 5100, Section 1 reductions. Those were the specified reductions. And that package reduces general fund by about $9.6 million total funds and eliminates a position. Primary issue here is the reduction in funding for certain self-improvement courses by 50%, which is specified reduction in the fifth special session, and also elimination of one position and some administrative reductions as well that move forward. Moving on to Package 83, this is the roll-up of October 2002 Emergency Board actions, $11 million, all other funds and federal funds adjustments that you made in October, and these are just the 03-05 impacts of those. Federal funds revenues increased from the Workforce Investment Act pieces, national emergency grants, and the Even Start Family Literacy Program prior to its transfer to the Department of Education. And other funds are increased based on increases in the Perkins Act funds and several sources supporting the Youth Conservation Corps as well. Package 90, program reductions, that's an $83 million increase actually in federal funds. It restores one administrative position that was eliminated in Package 92 with federal workforce funds. Essentially, the agency was able to identify some federal dollars to be able to restore that previously general funded position. Package 91 is the fifth special session, House Bill 5100, Section 2. These are the unspecified reductions from the second special session. This reduces general fund by about $29.5 million, increases federal funds by $30,000. Primarily, it's a roll-up of the unspecified reductions in the Community College Support Fund, about $29.3 million there. So a reduction in Youth Conservation Corps grant funding and some administrative reductions in fund shifts, a small amount of money. Package 92, additional program reductions. This eliminated inflation increases in Package 30, part of the governor's budget relating to elimination of compensation increases. And all inflation was removed both from the support fund and from the agency operations as well. Moving on to additional agency-specific policy package, Package 103 in the agency operations. This establishes four positions at 4.0 FTE with no funding attached to it. It continues three limited-duration workforce positions as permanent positions and adds one position to assist with community college professional technical programs. The positions are funded by shifting other and federal funds from professional services to personal services as noted increase in expenditure limitation. Package 104 shifts the Even Start Family Literacy Program to the Department of Education. As Cam indicated earlier, that fits with the current federal regulations as to where this program should be located at the state levels, so that reduced the community college budget by $3.7 million federal funds in the position. You'll see Package Department of Education's budget to pick that up as well. Package 106 establishes non-limited expenditure authority for the National Emergency Grants. These are funds that are provided under the Workforce and Investment Act, really on an emergency basis in response to some economic dislocation in the state. A company goes out of business, lays off a large number of employees, is probably the most typical reason that we receive these funds, and they pretty much move very quickly from the department out into the local providers for training and job placement services. There were a substantial amount of funds received in the last biennium, and in the emergency board, you allowed the agency to receive these funds without coming back and requesting approval to apply every time, because they just come in very quickly when there's an economic dislocation. Given that sort of the unpredictability, the fact that the funds come in and go out very quickly with real no administrative retainage by the agency, with no real policy control at the agency level, we're requesting that you shift these from federal funds limited to federal funds non-limited for essentially efficiency for the agency as well. Finally, there are no fee or revenue changes and no technical adjustments. That would be my presentation. Do you have any questions?
Questions or comments from Mr. McGee? Well, not only was that ahead of schedule, we're not going to torture you at all over this. What I'll do then is close the public hearing on House Bill 5009, and seeing no further business before this committee, we'll adjourn this meeting. We have no announcements. Very quickly, we do have Department of Education bringing forward some grant requests, and so as soon as we have a quorum in the committee, we'll be doing those grant requests. So if it is possible for you to be here right at 8:30, that would be very much appreciated. And the meeting is adjourned. We'll reconvene at 8:30 in the morning.